Welcome to Four Speed Ahead. I'm Craig Fuller here with Jordan Graff, the founder and CEO of Highway. Jordan, how are you doing, man?
I'm good, Craig. Great to see you. Great to be on today.
Yeah, you know, you and I have had a number of conversations over the last couple of years, but this, I think, is the first one we've had as you have started a new venture with Highway. You're really trying to solve the carrier identity problem that has propped up. A lot of load board fraud is out there and is propagating, so certainly the topic is on everyone's mind. But really, what's the goal of Highway?
Yeah, I mean, so we started Highway to bring carrier identity to the freight broker community. And when we talk about carrier identity, it's three things. Who are you? Are you really the carrier? And what equipment do you actually have? So when we look at a lot of the problems that we face in this industry today that are fraud related, a lot of at their core are identity problems. And so, you know, instead of trying to do whack-a-mole and solve individual problems that pop up, it's like, let's get to the art of who is this person, who is the person that's actually trying to get in your network, and what carrier are they, and what equipment do they actually have? Answers a lot of the, it's like getting ahead of the problem and solving it before it becomes an issue down the road. So that's the problem we're trying to solve. And we focus solely on freight brokers. That's who we sell to. And it's been a very exciting 8 months.
So load board fraud is propagating, is just exponentially increased over the last, you know, really 24 months. Is it really a function of a lot of the freight brokers and sort of an effort to staff up their operations during peak COVID, went out and offshored a lot of their operations? Is this what has caused sort of this moment and inflection of fraud, is that we've trained all these people to learn how load boards work and the opportunities behind it? Now that we've trained them, we don't have the workload for them, they sort of resorted to nefarious activities.
I think there's a lot of driving factors, right? In any market movement of this size, there's a lot of things that are driving it to occur. So the first is the whipsaw back, where capacity became very loose. And you had a lot of real participants leave the market. You have a lot of real trucking companies that do in a down market. And so I think that's the first factor that led to where we are today. What that creates is this feeling that fraud is happening more prevalent. In reality, what's happened is you've just shrunk the pool, right? The bad actors didn't leave. They're still there. They're still there, probably in the same number. Maybe they've grown a little bit over the last 18 months or 12 months, but now they're just a larger percentage of the interactions you have with quote unquote motor carriers. The second is the freight broker community is relatively new, right? This industry is not that old when you look at like certain industries like healthcare, financial services. And what's happened, I think, is this industry's gone from in the early 2000s from being 5 to 10% of for hire truckload movements to now it's almost 40 to 50% of all for hire truckload movements in the US. So it's grown really quickly. And that when you have an industry growing really quickly that doesn't have established patterns and standards for identity management, you open the door for fraud. And so that's the second factor, is now this industry is hitting this level of critical mass where it attracts fraudulent actors, fraudulent activity because of the size of the industry now. You know, we're talking $150, $200 billion of freight moving through this freight broker community. So it's attracting the attention of bad actors. And the third thing I think is when you look at like banking, right? If you went into a bank today and tried to borrow $100,000, like they're going to ask a lot of questions. They're going to ask, you know, they want your driver's license, they're going to do their KYC on you. But in today's world, you know, pre-Highway, people would book $100,000 worth of cargo on a truck they never saw, all based on an email exchange. And that's what we're trying to change, is adding more vigor and more and better identity management around how brokers interact with their carrier network, because the dollar value of what's going on that truck, is considerable, is starting to grow even more with inflation. And we need better practices for managing, you know, who's actually ending up hauling that.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that, you know, if I were to steal $100,000, it'd be a lot of authorities out looking at me. But if I steal a truck with $100,000 of cargo, you know, it has seemed as if the authorities sort of look at that as maybe a civil issue, in fact, maybe not even a criminal issue in some ways. What are you hearing from your customers that have implemented Highway? What have they seen? Why are they implementing Highway? What's driving this? And what is really the results that they're getting?
Yeah. I mean, we're having brokers that have went from having 5 to 10 double brokering events per month to zero after implementing Highway. And by implementing the practices and the procedures and the processes that we established for carriers coming into their network, they've seen, you know, if not complete drop-offs in the double brokering events that happen, almost near materially declining rates of what's happening. They have some legacy stuff they got to clean up in their network. It's hard for them to completely wash their network in one go. It takes time to gradually clean up that network, but it's producing real results. And it works because of our strategy, right? We can talk about tactics and like the things that we do, and people kind of get hung up on, you know, fraud reporting and, you know, or finding duplicate addresses or things like that. But really the strategy that we approach is three phases. The first is a reduced surface area. So in any info security world approach, you're trying to reduce the surface area of attack, the area that a bad actor can try into the system and take advantage of. And the second is we're trying to be the hardest target. So we make it harder for bad actors to get into the networks of our customers by doing things like looking at mobile phone data, by looking at ELD data, by looking at insurance data, and comparing all that together to create this comprehensive look at a carrier and putting them in a risk matrix of high risk versus low risk. And when we do that, it allows us to make a better experience for carriers that are low risk for fraud. People like U.S. Express, right? Who's now Knight-Swift. But make it easier for, you know, carriers where we have a lot of digital footprint to be able to identify who they are versus carriers where we have not a lot of digital. And then the third strategy is, hey, we view the world, there's two types of people in the world. There's good guys and bad guys. And it's a little oversimplistic for some people, but the difference between good guys and bad guys is their willingness to expose the digital. Like if I go and search Craig Fuller and look for you, you have a massive digital, like you're not trying to hide yourself. But if I go and look for someone that's trying to get into your carrier network and I can't find anything about them, they don't have social media profiles, they don't have activity under that name or that email or phone anywhere else out in the digital ecosystem, that's a big warning sign, because it's a bad actor. You want to keep your digital low because you're radar as much as possible to commit to fraudulent activity and then run away.
So Jordan, you spent years working at a bank. You actually built TriumphPay as part of the payment network that drives a lot of freight transactions. Is this where you learned about a lot of the best practices to apply to this fraud problem?
Yeah. So, I mean, I started my career at JP Morgan, worked at Triumph for 5 years, and absolutely, like, you know, the idea that you would onboard a customer as a bank and not do any due diligence, you know, and I didn't fully understand that in the broker freight community. But after spending time with, you know, my friends and counterparties in the industry and looking at how they intake carriers, you know, I saw what was a gap from where financial service providers, where financial service companies operate and where freight services. And so what we're trying to do is close that gap. We're using practices, best practices that we learn in financial services. You know, when the KYC process at JP Morgan was very involved. It was a matrix. Took a lot of the same. Hey, there's a matrix of how valuable are what we try to do with this customer? How much do we know about this customer? And bridging the gap and trying to close the gap and bring the two together to reduce the amount of surface area of risk.
Even submitting a wire, use JP Morgan, is painful these days because they've made it so paternal where, you know, they want to know, who did you talk to? Did you confirm? Did you talk online? Like, what's their phone number? It's just, it's gotten really difficult to just transact in some ways, because in the process of really trying to mitigate fraud, they've created a lot of friction in the process. It strikes me that one of the things that we've seen in freight brokerage, as you talked about proliferation, one of the things that we've seen is this desire for efficiency. The digital natives, as well as some of the traditional brokers, have really talked about the number of freight transactions per broker, the number of dollars or margin per broker, and that's really these KPIs they try to drive for. But when you look at fraud mitigation, if you slow down and you do the verification, you do the diligence, it's actually counter to that KPI. it seems like our industry has got to sort of balance those. And I don't know, at least what I see, is there executive buy-in across the industry to really, you know, are they willing to sacrifice some of the efficiencies to gain some of the fraud mitigation? Are we seeing that happen?
Man, you hit on a great topic. In product development, there's always the trade-off between user experience and security, right? And you always have to make that trade-off. The value of what we provide to our customers, we do it once, and then we share that with any broker that subscribed to Highway. We share that information. We share that report. We share that analysis with all the brokers that are subscribed. So the carrier doesn't have to do it 500 times. They do it one. And so there's value in there, right? So yes, we make it a more challenging experience at first for high-risk carriers. So the first thing is we also segment the carrier base into low, medium, high-risk, and like a gray. And so we're able to say, hey, if you're a high-risk carrier, yeah, it's going to be more challenging, but there's a reason. You have 1 month authority, no inspections, and you know there's a lot of warning signs about your profile versus someone that has a very long established pattern. We want that to happen. So doing it one time versus 250 times every time they want to try and work with a broker helps with that, right? It reduces down that friction. The second I would tell you is, yes, the executive leadership is the decision, is the person who's not only the decision maker, but driving the process. We see that at the large brokerages that are because you have this just incredibly right area for fraud, okay? When you think about a carrier sales, they have urgency, trying to cover a load really quick. This load's got to be covered. Urgency is the number one risk factor for fraudulent activity to occur. When you have that sense of urgency, I've got to get this done now. You have financial incentive. The carrier sales rep's trying to make their commission. They're trying to get the load covered. They're doing what they're being paid to do. Hey, get this load covered. So that's the second warning sign when you have the prevalence of fraud. And the third is no physical interaction. And so that's why this is a breeding ground for fraudulent activities, because you have urgency, financial incentive, and no physical interaction. And so you've got to put something, you've got to wrap that process with something, or this process will only continue to grow because of it's just the breeding ground for fraudulent activities.
Yeah, I guess your company becomes a target at that point, right? Because they know that your processes are not sound. I mean, the bigger you are, the multiple offices you run actually makes you more vulnerable if you're not implementing best practice. You know, one of the things that, you know, I spent 9 years in payments, you spent a lot of time in banking, so we have that in common, we speak the same language. One of the things that, you know, we did in the payments business is we had compliance officers and we did a lot of work. You know, the term that folks in freight may not know the term KYC, which is know your customer. It seems like you guys are moving towards know your carrier, sort of a different version of KYC, which really fundamentally is based on the same sort of rules of engagement. One thing that I have not seen, except for the asset-based trucking companies, which have historically had to deal with claims and OS&D issues, is I don't know a ton of brokers that have really a compliance department, have really built up a really robust compliance function. Are you seeing that change over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like the compliance function is becoming more and more important to freight brokers. And we're seeing those people are now going from being the naysayers in the office, the ones that turned down carriers and turned down customers, to now being strategically brought into discussions at the brokerage on, where are we making investments? Where are we spending dollars? Where are we trying to grow our brokers? They're being brought into more of the strategic discussions because of risk. And I think you hit it. Like, this industry is coming out of just a massive growth phase over the last 10, 15 years. And it's trying to catch its breath with some of the infrastructure like things like compliance and risk and process management. I know a lot of brokers, a lot of large brokers, publicly traded ones, operate control environments. We operate in a control environment. We have a SOC 2, SOC 2 audit process that we go through every year. I think you're going to see a lot more of that, because you talk about efficiency and going fast, but you also got to talk about when you reach a certain scale, you have a target on your back from these bad actors trying to get into your network and try to steal loads and steal money from you and steal your reputation. And the combat, how to combat that is you've got to use tools like Highway that help bring greater transparency, and you've got to start putting more controls into your business to be able to run at the pace that you want to run at, the scale you want to run. So it's absolutely becoming more and more important compliance function at our broker. And it's different, like you said, it's different than an asset-based carrier. It's not as geared around safety as it is now around fraud and other types of legal liability.
Yeah, I mean, the sort of rule of thumb, at least when I was in brokers, I'm dating myself by almost two decades, which you realize how old you are now, or at least I realize how old I am. You know, there was a lot of things in a brokerage world you were told not to ask or not to do because you didn't want that liability. If you had knowledge of something, then were they liable or potentially liable? Whereas in the asset-based world, it's quite different. You actually have the liability, whether you want it or not. It strikes me that when it comes to compliance and carrier compliance, that it is something that freight brokerages need to take leadership of, because it will expose them if they don't manage it.
Yeah, the trial lawyers are relentless, right? You know, they're continuing to look for pocketbooks to get into anytime there's tragically an accident, right? Or and I think, you know, you see the large brokers are targets. That, you know, they're the ones that are going to drive this industry because they're the ones that are targeted by the trial lawyers who are plaintiff attorneys who are trying to, you know, bring them into lawsuits, you know, unfortunately, when an event occurs. So I can't predict the future, but I think the trend is going to be towards more awareness of those factors.
Yeah, we've seen lawsuits where, like, Smith Robinson lost a major settlement or a lawsuit where they had to pay, I think it was $25 million because they demonstrated some negligence in doing some underwriting. But, you know, Sage Robinson's handling, you know, 20,000 loads a week or maybe a day at this point. And in doing so, they're naturally going to be exposed to a transaction or two that just get through the system, no matter how accurate they are. Just happens, just law, large numbers. Jordan, I'm going to go back to something you said earlier that really sort of was interesting as a tidbit on any kind of fraud, whether we're talking, you know, load board fraud, we're talking banking fraud, even dating fraud. You made the comment that somebody with thin digital, like no social media experience, that suggests that they have something to hide. Is that a general rule? Is that something that you have learned through your experience, that if someone does not have a strong digital footprint, it suggests that there is something wrong with that person?
It's not wrong. Okay, let's be clear on our terminology. It's not wrong. It's just if there's a low
trying to hide, rate, right?
It increases the likelihood that they're trying to hide. And you think about just a bad actor, right? Someone that's really intends to steal money or steal loads. They don't want you to know who they really are, right? They really don't want you to know their real name, their real phone number, where they live, what they do. They don't want you to know that information because they're trying to commit a crime. And so you kind of have to use derivatives. You have to use a derivative of information. Motive is like, really want to commit crime. I don't want you to know who I am. And so we key in on that as a derivative of the potential intended motive. Now, the keys here in the highway experience in not making, you know, proactive decisions to say, hey, you can't work with these carriers, right? Like, is remedy. You have to provide a path of remedy when you have a situation where someone has fallen into a high risk category because of a low digital footprint or because of some other factors. You always have to provide remedy because you can't be biased. You can't just say, hey, you don't have social media, you can't get through, right? Like, no, like you've got to give them a path to cure. And that's the subtlety in the highway that I think creates a positive carrier experience when they really are a good actor. But also we do it in such a way that if you don't really have the ability to pass the remedy, it's, you know, as a bad actor, you're going to run from it because we're going to ask you to reveal more than you really are. That's, you know, if you're trying to commit a crime you don't want to do.
Isn't a lot of this just because they made it up? I mean, they just made it up or stole somebody's identity. Isn't that the predominance of the reason they don't have it? I mean, you're saying something that it's actually quite intentional. Like, they actually don't, not only have they stolen the identity, but they also don't want to be found at all. And so you're actually saying it's that sort of second layer of deceit, nefariousness.
Yeah, there's two paths, right? The first path is try to present yourself as a carrier, you know, by getting authority or buying authority and operating under some docket number or DOT number that you're presenting to others as a legitimate, but there's no legitimacy. There's no equipment. There's nothing real there, right? So that is a different set of attack vectors, countermeasures for that, where we're trying to say, okay, are you really a carrier? Do you really have equipment? What type of equipment do you actually have? And using physical data to enhance the digital profile of those. And the second is what you describe as identity theft, trying to pretend to be somebody else, trying to get someone like you, they're spoofing their email or changing one letter in the domain and try and get a carrier sales rep to send me a rate con so I can go pick up the load and steal it. That is a different set of tool attack vectors and countermeasures that we use through our Outlook plugin and our fraud search tool in Highway, where we're trying to like help brokers realize the person, the user who's trying to interact with you really isn't who they say they are. They're not really that carrier. And that, I would say, is probably where we still have the most opportunity to just make the problem go away. You know, when we sell product to brokers, when we sell product to customers, we want to say, we just want to make the problem go away. You don't have to worry about it. Just let the process run. And in that area where the pretending to be someone you're not, that's where, you know, we've rolled out the new Outlook plugin that's in the Microsoft App Store. And we've just rolled out the fraud search in Highway's UI and the API. That we can really help reduce down the stolen load by someone pretending to be someone else.
You mean load phishing, essentially. Is they're changing the identity, they're changing the identity of who they are, and they're using maybe a carrier, changing the name slightly, like let's go back to US Express, just because it's a name that is easy to change. I know this personally, because people would always spell it with an E. I mean, that's a relatively easy thing to create a US Express dot whatever, and it may not get caught by someone that they're in. We're not talking about the US Express based in Chattanooga that's owned by Knight Swift. We're talking about some, you know, somebody who's pretending to be US Express or add an extra S or an extra X, where they can confuse the person that's trying to move really quick through the system. And you're saying Highway catches those actions and prevents it from just no different than what Outlook or Google says, hey, this email looks suspicious.
Exactly. Flagging for the carrier sales rep in their inbox, red light, yellow light, green light. Hey, red light, this is highly likely to try to be freightbull.com and they change the I to an L.
Load board fraud and load phishing, as I described it, which is the using false identity to effectively get a load, strikes me as the most dangerous kind of theft or the most dangerous kind of fraud that's out there, because it's different than taking a load advance. It's actually with the intentions of stealing the cargo. And is that really where you see the biggest risk in terms of theft?
Yeah. So when we think about the risk associated with carrier fraud, let's break it down into the types of risk and then the buckets of fraud and which ones are most prevalent. The first is financial risk. So the financial loss of the rate, right? Maybe you have to pay two carriers, right? Pay an underlying carrier or double pay the rate. The second financial risk is a loss.
The upper end of that's a couple thousand dollars loss, right?
Exactly. The second financial risk is a stolen cargo, right? You get a $100,000 load stolen or $200,000 load stolen. Like most brokers are going to have some indemnity provide to the shipper that may or may not be covered by their cargo policy and oftentimes probably isn't. And the third is reputational risk, right? When the shipper finds out you got one of their loads stolen or you didn't really know who the carrier was, it was double brokered. That's not a great relation. That's not a conversation anyone ever wants to have with their shipper. So those are kind of the three buckets of risk as we think about them.
I know a friend of mine ran a small, it was an air freight forwarder that happened to have a small truckload brokerage business. And they had a load from a major video game company. And the load was, they tendered it to a broker, the broker then double brokered it out, and the load was stolen. And this, you know, this phishing expedition that happened, it was, you know, it was a coordination between the nefarious actor, the load broker that phished it, and some trucking company that, you know, was also, committing the fraud, was participating in that. And they effectively liquidated the cargo. Well, he had a claim of $750,000 and he was a $4 million real small forwarder. You know, they ended up having to pay it. Insurance was not willing to pay it because they found that they had violated their own insurance policy. So it strikes me this risk, this theft risk, is a major and substantial risk that is going to continue to be very profitable for bad actors because the enforcement is just not there.
Like you said when you started, right? If you walked into a bank for $400,000, if you walked into a bank and stole $750,000, you would be in prison, right? They are going to come find you.
$50,000. You have every cop. There was a bank in Chattanooga that was robbed a couple of months ago. And every cop in the city, it felt like, was looking for this person. They were pulling video from all of the adjacent area. I mean, it was like a major, major investigation. Bank crimes are very serious. You steal a truck, which happens every day across the country. No one seems to care.
Here's why, in my opinion, it feels that when you steal money from a bank, the bank teller had a gun pointed in their face. Consumers, oh, they're stealing my money. There's this fear anxiety as a consumer if bank thefts aren't stopped, right? Bank robberies aren't stopped. Like, they're taking money, right? That's like, it's easy as a consumer, as an individual, to project that. And so, therefore, authorities react to that, right? They do. They react to the fact that, like, individuals and consumers have fear and anxiety about what's happened. When a truck's stolen, when a load of video games is stolen, you know, it's hard to, like, point to who the true victim was, right? Like, it feels anonymous, right? It's this company. It's this brokerage, right? Your buddy, but like, it's this company, right? It's company crime. It's like B2B crime. And that, as you know, doesn't draw the same level of attention from legal, from the law enforcement, from enforcement authorities. It's because it's B2B versus consumer B2B.
Hey, Jordan, when I was in trucking, we had loads that were hijacked at gunpoint, drivers that were hijacked at gunpoint back in the, you know, back in the early 2000s. With organized crime, I didn't care either. Like I recognize that going into a bank and having a gun pointed at you is a pretty tremendously frightening crime. But also, it was a truck driver having a gun pointed at you is also a tremendously frightening crime. And we had that happen in the early 2000s. It was a rash of these sort of hijackings. So we know it happens, but we also know, more importantly, that fraud happens, and this is a sort of intelligent crime, if you will. You are developing solutions to help mitigate it and solve for it. What is the uptake and what are the results you're hearing from your customers?
Yeah, so, you know, we're getting close to 300 active paying customers, brokers that are using iWay. And, you know, we kind of talked a little bit about it, but we're seeing brokers. GIS is a great example. Mike Young, they went from having 5 to 10 double brokering events a month down to 0. We had another large broker go live a couple months ago, and they saw an 80% reduction in the first month in double brokering events. And the ones they had were some legacy carriers that were still in their system that they wanted to, you know, they didn't push them through iWay. And so the result was that now they're pushing all their carriers through iWay. So seeing real results, reducing friction, we talked about it at the beginning where you said, you know, user experience or efficiency, moving really fast is where everyone wants to go. But by doing this, you're going to slow down the process. That's fair. Like in the trade-off, and what we talked about, we do it once instead of having to do it for every broker. But it's also like, you've got to think about the aftermath effect, right? Like if you onboard a fraudulent actor in your network, the cost in people's time and reputational risk and financial risk way exceeds. You know, is that's your biggest potential cost and risk in what gums up the wheels, right? We spend all your leadership's time dealing with stolen loads or double brokering events and trying to put out fires. Can't focus on strategic initiatives if all you're doing is running around putting out fires. So that's the value I think we're bringing. The most value we're bringing to our customers is helping put out fires, prevent these things from happening, and turning into material issues after, you know, blowing up.
Jordan, I had to ask, load board fraud is something that's continued to proliferate. Are the load board companies responsible for managing and mitigating that fraud? Do they have responsibility for this?
You know, I think we all have a part. As free tech providers in the industry, we all have a part in doing this. You know, not all of these activities come directly from the load board. Not all of these, you know, the load phishing's not coming from the load board, right? They're just trying to get into networks. I think ultimately it's going to come down to who can stop it, right? And that's You know, we can point fingers and we can talk about who's responsible, who's liable. But in reality, we just need to make it where they can't get in our industry. Like, they'll continue to always be until the end of time, fraudulent activity. The goal is to make it where it's so frustrating and annoying to do it in a brokerage that they find other industries. That's the goal. You got to make it where it's so painful and the cost to do it becomes so high that they have to go to other industries. They'll go to other industries. They'll find other. It's just naturally how the world works, right? So, you know, we like to focus on like, how can we as a help the industry, as a community, as a member of this community, make it harder for people to commit fraud inside this industry so that they go find somewhere else to waste, you know, waste resources.
Jordan, really appreciate your time today. Really important topic, fraud in our industry. It's not going away. You know, the challenge of this is as criminals discover the opportunities, it just encourages more criminals to join into the fun, if you will. And so it's something that we're going to have to deal with, and it's something that everybody should take serious. I appreciate what you're doing at Highway, and how can folks reach you?
Yeah, reach me at jordan@gohighway.com or just come to gohighway.com and be happy to set up a demo.
Sounds great. Jordan, thank you so much.